With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Is podcasting just a hobby, or can it be a job? Can you even build a big podcast without spending a bunch of money on advertising? And when can you buy advertising and have it work? This is Podcast Creators, where we get podcasting advice from real podcasters. On the show today, we have Jordan Harbinger, host of The Jordan Harbinger Show, and we answer all these questions and so much more. I'll be your host, Greg, creator of Indie Drop-In Network. This interview is recorded on Riverside FM, so if you like the way it looks and sounds, you can check out our affiliate link in the description box below. I'll also put all the other links to all the stuff we talk about down in the description box below. All right, let's get to it. Hey, Jordan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, man, the honor's mine. Like, I can't wait to get into some of this stuff. I have a feeling, and no pressure, that that some of the stuff that you say is going to be gold. And if it's not, I'm just going to call you right out on it.
That's fine. That just do it. Just don't hold back.
Yeah, no problem. So why don't you introduce yourself and your show for people who might live under a rock?
Yeah, Jordan Harbinger is my name. I'm the host of the creatively titled Jordan Harbinger Show. And my podcast, or I've been podcasting for 14 years. My podcast is one of the more, I guess, well-known shows at this point. I've done something like 1,200 interviews. So, you know, I try and get out there. This is my full-time gig. It has been for a long time.
Yeah.
Pretty passionate about interviewing and podcasting especially. So it's a good time to be in that industry. That's for sure. You know, we're on fire right now.
Yeah, for sure. The growth is crazy, both in new podcasters, which is what we're going to talk about a lot today, but also just, I think, in total downloads, it's just accumulating in speed, which I think is incredible. But let's set some context here, because the Jordan Harbinger Show, it's a great name for you, but it might be the worst name for a beginning podcaster.
It is, yeah. Yeah, look, I didn't pick the name because I thought, like, oh, I'm so special, people are, you know, going to want to hear this. I think naming a show after yourself is generally a bad idea. If I'd had a better name in mind than that, I would have chosen it. But all of the ideas that I had were crap, and all of the ideas that I was given by other people were worse. So I just went with the Jordan Harbinger Show. The other reason is I was splitting off from another well-known podcast that I did for 11 years, which I, like, isn't really much of a thing anymore. But I was like, how are people going to find me? You know, they're going to be looking for me. And I was like, okay, what are they going to search for? And I'm like, well, they're going to search for my name, if anything. So I was like, all right, I'll name it the Jordan Harbinger Show. And then it'll be really clear. It'll be really obvious that I'm gone from that other show and that this is my new show. So it was purely like function, I would say, versus form.
Yeah. Well, you know, it obviously worked out. Let's kind of talk about the split off, because this is where I think the interesting bits for me kind of start, because, you know, the other show, there was a few of you, right? It wasn't just you, it was you and a couple people, and you split off in 2018. What what made you do that? Like, why did you think that you could go off on your own and do it better?
Yeah. So I had been sort of like itching to leave that company for a while. And it was something I didn't really have the courage to do. You know, I was like, oh, I can't do it alone. It's going to be too hard. It's going to be like, how am I going to do this? And that was, well, wasn't correct, but you know, a lot of times when you're leaving something, you know, when you're in a relationship or when you're leaving a job, or when you're moving somewhere new, you don't necessarily think that you can do it on your own. And that was kind of where I was. And then I finally, like, due to a confluence of circumstances, had just finally had it with like my, both my business partners and the business that we were in and the direction that things were going. And there was a lot of just like shenanigans. And I was like, you know, everyone's telling me to go off on my own. I like doing the business this way. You guys have ideas that I think are crap. And you're forcing them on me. So I'm not going to do this anymore. And they were like, great. So we negotiated an amicable split. They did not abide by the terms of the split that we negotiated. So I left anyway. And then they were like, well, we're going to sue you for competing against us. And then they didn't win that lawsuit. And I just decided, look, I'm just going to rebuild the Jordan Harbinger show. And that was scary, but also really great, because I thought, okay, I built this other show for 11 years. It's going to take me like 5 years to rebuild this one. The sooner I get started, the better. Within 1 year, I was already larger than the other company that I'd left. And now we're 3.5 years in, and I think we're like five times the size or something in terms of revenue.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you specifically about your downloads in a minute. But one thing I wanted to point out, because I think context is everything when people are looking to learn, right? You're a true textbook indie podcaster. I mean, you started with nothing. There was nobody helped you. You got a couple of buddies together. You learned it. Is that true? Am I missing anything? Were you sponsored by like a celebrity, like trip over?
That's it. I mean, it was a lot of hard work in the beginning. We didn't have sponsors in the for years because there weren't anybody. Nobody was sponsoring podcasts, first of all. So there was that.
Right.
But no, it was me and a buddy, and then that buddy, after literally like a couple of years, was like, it's stupid. Nobody cares about podcasting, and he just stopped participating. And then it was all on me, which actually, like, at the time was really annoying and kind of sucked. But I really liked podcasting, so it wasn't the end of the world. And now, looking back, it was actually a huge blessing, because I had to learn all of the things that he was doing in the podcast and then learned how to run the show and eventually sort of, like, left, you know, over years, if you're practicing a skill and the other people you started practicing that skill with aren't going to class anymore, then you surpass them pretty quickly. So in the beginning, it was like, oh no, how am I going to do this on my own? And then it was like, okay, I can do this on my own. And now, you know, ironically, those guys, for a while after we split, they were trying to run the podcast. I think maybe they still are, but it's like, I remember them telling me, in like when we split up, they're like, what you do isn't hard. Anybody can talk into a microphone. And I remember being like, oh, you'll see. You will find out. And now it's like, oh, I guess Jordan did have something that he was bringing to the table. And I just thought that was kind of funny, because that's kind of like saying that somebody who plays basketball, oh, you just run up and down the court and you throw the ball in the hoop. It's not hard. Or like, you know, saying that somebody who's a track runner, oh, you just have to run as fast as you can. It's like, well, yeah, but you don't think you're missing any nuance here? So that was kind of a funny thing for me, because of course at the time I was like really insulted and I thought like, and then a few minutes later I was like, well, wait a minute. Like, this is just like, they just don't have any idea how this is going to work. And that worked out really well for me, you know, over time, because when people throw you in the deep end, it sucks and you get overwhelmed. But once you learn how to swim, you're like, wait, I can do this, you know?
Yeah. It sounds like there might still be a little bitterness there.
Oh, I mean, don't get me wrong. When people treat me poorly, like these guys literally tried to like screw me over while I had a pregnant wife. So I don't feel bad at all that they're screwed right now. Like, I'm glad. They deserve it, you know, candidly. And
that is hilarious.
There's a lot of like, oh, you should be a better person than that. I'm like, really? Why? Somebody tried to screw me over while I had like, they tried to make me go
broke. A lot
broke.
Of risk.
They sued me to try and make me go broke and stress me out. They tried to freak out my wife who was pregnant. Like, no, these are terrible people. They deserve to fail. And I hope that they sleep zero nights for the next decade. Like, screw them. Yeah, there's bitterness there.
Yeah.
I don't dwell on it. I don't think about it every day. But when I'm recounting the story or something, I'm not going to be like, oh, well, you know, we had different ideas and they go, no, I'm going to call shit like I see it. Bad people deserve bad shit to happen to them, period. I don't feel bad at all.
I think this is really important because every day on Twitter, there's somebody that says like, oh, my co-host isn't responding to me. Oh, we can't figure out how to come to terms on what direction the show is going to be. There's always these crazy creative differences and it crushes shows. And I think you're a perfect example of how you can say, no,
I can do it better. Yeah.
Like, let's just go our separate
just break
ways.
Up with it. I mean, if I, like for years, I had people saying, dude, leave the company, leave the show.
Yeah.
You bring all of the stuff to this company into the show. And I was like, no, that's a bad, I don't want to be like the Axl Rose guy who like screws everything up. I'm not arrogant enough to think I'm the one bringing the value. Like, thanks for saying that. You're just being nice. And then after a while, you get mistreated enough where you're just like, I don't have a choice but to try it myself. And now I'm like, oh, they were right. I just wasn't self-centered enough. I wasn't enough of a prick to believe my own press back then. And I recommend people don't believe their own press. Like, don't listen to what your mom says about you and believe it. But like, when a lot of people are saying that, maybe they're onto something, especially if you're not teasing it out of them. And so you do have to kind of know when to have the confidence to just bounce. And I wish I had left the company earlier. Although everything, you know, everything worked out great for me in the end. It would have been even better if I'd left like 3 to 4 to 5 years earlier, because I would have just had to put up with way less shit and I would have had way more time to grow and I wouldn't have dealt with some, you know, you lose earning potential over time. You waste time going in the wrong direction. Like if I use 2020 hindsight right now, I look at like things we did and I'm like, I knew that was wrong then. I remember telling you that that was wrong. And my wife will be like, remember when they did that thing and you said that's a bad idea? Then 3 years later, it was a terrible idea and you wasted all that time and all that money. And I'm like, yep. You know, like you regret that kind of thing. But then you get philosophical about it and you're like, but where I am now, would it have worked out as well? Like maybe I'd left earlier. Couldn't have made it work because experience, not enough sponsors, whatever. And then maybe I would have quit. You know, you just don't know. So you don't want to beat yourself up over the past, but you sure as hell want to learn your lessons and be like, next time I feel like I'm in a business arrangement where I'm bringing everything to the table or any relationship, I'm going to listen to that feeling and not be like, oh, that's just your ego talking. Like, I wish I'd listened to other people's advice and possibly also my own ego instead of being like, humble, but also just not confident enough to make the moves I needed to make. You know, I think about this and I go, you know, them and me coming to an amicable split and them not honoring it was actually the best thing that could have possibly happened to me. But also that's luck, you know?
It is a little bit luck. And I think there's two things here, right? Like it's okay to be a little bitter when you're screwed over.
Yeah.
That's part of life.
Yeah.
And the other thing is the universal truth is education is expensive. It's either expensive in time or effort or money. It's hard. The learning stuff is really hard. So let's talk about the show a little bit. Let's talk about where it is today, right? There's 555 episodes published and, you know, you have many more than I'm sure you've dropped off or put in buckets or whatever you've done. But you know, your website says 11 million downloads a month.
Yeah, I mean, it fluctuates, right? It's either 9, 10, 11. Yeah, but you put, when you're marketing, you put the highest number on there because that's what you're supposed to do, right? Like, I never try to exaggerate or lie because that can bite you in the ass. But if I have a year and I'm fluctuating between 9 and 11 million downloads that year, and two of the months are 11, and the rest are 10 and a few of them are 9 or whatever, I'm putting 11, right? That's marketing. Mm-hmm. But if you have one that's 11 and the rest are 2 and it's 11 because of some weird mistake, you don't put 11 because then you're full of shit, right? So
do you find macro things happen in the world that affect your downloads? Like,
there's like a bug that was happening in Apple. You hear about this.
That's a big one. Yeah.
So that's a big thing that affected like the whole industry. But no, like not really. I mean, yeah. Well, okay. Let me think about this. Are there macro? Yes. When kids get out of school, everyone's routine gets disrupted. So like July is such a weird month for downloads. It's usually low.
Right.
And August is also low because I think like Europe goes on vacation and is like, nah. And then December is a little bit low because the last 2 weeks everyone's off or they're like running around getting gifts for their kids and they're waiting in line at the Lego store. They're not trying to listen to your show. So yeah, there's stuff like that that affects downloads, but
What about like big, like the international incidents that happen that drag people to news?
Not really. No, I thought like, oh my God, the election is going to just dominate. Everyone's only going to listen to like political podcasts. So I was waiting for the dip and I told my advertisers like, hey, if we don't hit it, we're going to do make goods for you. Don't worry. Yeah. And it was like no change at all. Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty crazy because that's not the trend. And maybe that's just a testament to how good your show is.
Maybe also I think a lot of people, I think a lot of people who are paying attention to politics are also listening to the Jordan Harbinger show. So they're not like, I'm going to listen to even more. Like they're already there. And then a lot of people who listen to political shows are like, okay, I can't take it anymore. They're talking about Donald Trump and Joe Biden. I'm just over it. So then they start listening. So maybe there's like a thing where that cancels each other out. The other thing is, I think when you're really niche down small, like you're talking about Afghanistan, that's really going to be subject to like what's going on in Afghanistan and who's paying attention to what's going on in Afghanistan. But if you are talking about everything, if you're just, hey, I interviewed Howie Mandel and, oh, hey, Malcolm Gladwell's coming on. And, oh, we have a pimp this week or a former pimp, you know, or T-Pain's on. It's like, you know, you just don't get a ton of, oh, but Afghanistan, I'm only paying attention to that. Like, yes, there's some of those, but then there's all these other people that come in and come out. So like, the fluctuations are so, they don't move the needle in a direction where you go, what the hell happened? You know, you get, if you get 5% up or down any given week, you're not really paying that much attention to that.
And you're doing such big numbers that I think that that would be pretty common for it to fluctuate. I mean,
oh my God, I got 10,000 downloads less today than I usually do on a Tuesday. And then next week on Tuesday, I get 10,000 downloads more. And it's like, well, okay. It just doesn't make a difference.
Right. So let's maybe wind the film back to when you started, because I made a poor assumption and I'll just own up to it right now. I really thought that, you know, when you split from your old show, which was a decent sized show, I kind of did a little research, that you probably announced it and, you know, your show, your listeners kind of traveled to you with, you know, to the Jordan Harbinger show, and that gave you a little bit of bump. But it sounds like that's not
No, that was not what happened. So they were really clear. It was like, you're taking the, I was supposed to take the show with me when I left the company because they couldn't afford to pay for my stock, my shares. Then one day they were just like, we're locking you out of everything. And I was like, cool, that's not the agreement at all. And so my lawyer was like, we should sue the crap out of them. And I was like, don't even bother. Like, I know better than to try to get blood from a stone. This isn't going to end up anywhere. So forget it. And so we had a couple options where it was like, go black ops and, you know, get back into the accounts and then transfer the feed over. And I was like, that's just begging for a lawsuit in the other direction. So I just started over, and it was horrible because the beginning was like 3,000 downloads a day. And I was like, oh my God, no one's going to find us. We're totally, totally screwed. And then a few days in, I started calling friends like Pat Flynn and like other people that I knew who were in podcasting. I was like, can you announce to everyone that I left and I'm on this other thing? And can I come on your show and talk about it? And so I had a bunch of friends like, you know, like James Altucher and guys like that, like email their list for me and do social media posts. And I immediately saw these like massive spikes because you have, let's say, a 15% audience overlap with 10 different people. If those 10 different people post about this, then literally thousands or tens of thousands of people are going to be like, wait, I subscribed to that guy's show. What? He's gone. Let me find the new one right now because I'm a fan. So I went from like 3,000 downloads a day to like 33,000 downloads a day, a couple of weeks or even a couple of days in. And then over time, the episodes that I had recorded for my previous show with what that I was on ran out. And instead of, this is like a huge mistake that those guys made. They didn't record right away. They waited like 3 months to record episodes or something. So people were like, dude, what's going on with this show? And people were posting about it on Reddit. And then it was like, Jordan left. And they were like, what? Oh yeah, here's the link. So if they had just continued, a lot of people would have been like, oh, well, maybe he's on vacation. But since they didn't do any work at all for whatever reason, everyone was like curious. And that curiosity drove a ton of new listens. And then once they started recording and I wasn't there, people who were regular listeners who hadn't caught on and hadn't paid attention and just thought we were on a hiatus, they were like, what is this crap? Because if I go and do the, look, if you and I decide we're going to go and host Jimmy Kimmel and we lock Jimmy Kimmel in a basement, we might do a really good job, but most people are going to be like, where the hell is Jimmy Kimmel? you know, what's going on here? You guys are turds. Right. Or we're really great, but also where the hell is Jimmy Kimmel? So that's what happened.
Yeah. So how long did it take you to get downloads to a number where you thought I can sustain this lifestyle? Like this is doable as my job.
It took like in the beginning or after I left the other show?
After you left, you know, the Jordan Harbinger show is brand new. Like you have a big, like there's a lot of chaos in your life. This is a new thing. You get 3,000 downloads. You're basically reaching going, please help, please help, please help. Your friends help you.
Yeah.
But $33,000 you're not going to make $100,000 a year on $33,000.
No, you're not.
So
what happened was 6 to 8 months in, we were already kind of at sustainable level. And the reason was because we had reached out to our advertisers and we kind of got ahead of it. And we were like, this is what happened. And they were like, oh, well, if you underperform, we're going to ask for refund or make good. And my network, Podcast One, was like, we'll figure it out. And they had good clout to be able to say that, right? Because let's say that if I'm doing something new and I say, don't worry, I'll make it good. They're like, well, what are you talking about? How are you going to make it good? You don't know that you can make it good. But Podcast One's like, if his ads don't work on his show, we'll put him on Adam Carolla. And the advertisers are like, all right, whatever. So that was great. So the advertisers stuck with us. And what was interesting was like 3 to 6 months in, I was like, okay, lay it on me. We've obviously been underperforming. You sold them at, you know, 100,000 downloads per episode or something like that. And I'm at like, you know, 38. And they were like, yeah, you're doing fine. You're doing good. You're performing. And I'm like, how is that even possible? And now that I think, you know, now I'm thinking about it, the reason was almost certainly this. If you sell an ad at 100,000 downloads an episode because you used to have 100,000 downloads an episode, but then you start and you move somewhere else and now you only have 38,000. Those 38,000 people are the ones that cared enough. Those were that probably the Venn diagram of your audience and audience that supports sponsors is probably almost like completely overlapping. If you have that 38,000 member audience, those are the people that cared to look for you and find you. And they're the ones that know that you're like chugging along and you just sort of like need their support. The other 70,000, you know, 62,000, whatever it was, people that didn't come along, some of them supported your sponsors, but most of them were just casual fans, listeners, whatever. They'll get there whenever they want. So that the core group of people that supported you, you know, your 10,000 true fans or whatever, those are the people that really matter because those are the ones that convert and support your sponsors. So if you're getting branding ads where it's like, yeah, talk about Nike and they're paying you for the impressions, yeah, you got to make up those impressions. But if they're just trying to sell mattresses and they expect you to sell 10 mattresses a month and you're selling 9, they're good. They're fine. They don't care that the other 60 plus thousand people didn't hear the ad. They're not thrilled, but they're not going to desert you. They're going to probably renew. They might ask for a little discount, but like that's what happened. Network had my back. Advertisers had my back. Performed for most of them. They realized we were in a transition phase. Then when we repitched them to renew, we were like, here's where we were when you bought and here's where we were when you evaluated performance and here's where we are now and here's where we're going. And they were like, great, sign us up, you know, so it worked out really well. But that only works if you have like a track record of not screwing it up, basically.
So maybe we can kind of bring this into the lens of an indie podcaster, right? You're a brand new podcaster. Mm-hmm. Let's say you're working away for a year and maybe you have, let's say 500 downloads an episode. What kind of changes would you make to the show in that case? They don't have Podcast One. They don't have your Rolodex of friends, right? It's just, you know, a couple of people in a room making a true crime podcast to 500 people.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, don't get too discouraged. Imagine 500 people sitting in a room. It's a lot. You know, you'd sell out most.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
like small to medium sized theaters anywhere in America. Right. So that's good. But the other thing is, and I say it's easy for me to say, but you shouldn't really start a podcast to make money because it's kind of a crappy way to make money most of the time. It's like being an actor. I'm not an actor. I mean, I guess I'm a voice actor in video games, but that's neither here nor there. The idea that you can just decide to do it and make a living doing it, any sort of artistic pursuit is not something that you're entitled to just because you have the education to do it, which most of us don't anyways, right? Like, if you're an engineer, yeah, right. Theoretically, you should be able to get a job as an engineer somewhere. If you're an actor or a podcaster, you don't really have that same expectation, or you shouldn't anyways, right? So like Hollywood is full of people. Everybody there is folding towels at Equinox and they're also actors. Every bartender in Hollywood is also an actor, right? There's a reason that they're there and it's not because they love folding towels. So the same thing with podcasting. You know, I didn't start my show to make money. I started the show because I was teaching a course and then I really enjoyed it. And then I used it as lead gen for another business. And then I did it as a hobby. And then it was a da da da. And now I'm like, oh, okay. Now I have the scale that I need to sell advertisements and make a living. But you should, in my opinion, be pretty grateful if you're buying a case of beer every month with the money from your podcast. And that's the beer you drink before you do the podcast. You know, that's, wow, your hobby pays for the microphone that you bought at the end of the year and the audio interface, or it pays your internet bill. Like, you're winning. Most people's hobbies are negative money. And you have to just kind of be aware of when you have a hobby and when you have a business and not confuse the two. And you've seen, you know, you see that on Shark Tank all the time, right? They're like, this is a hobby, not a business. I'm out. A lot of podcasters probably would do good to realize this. YouTubers, creators of all kinds, you can have a tip jar, but that tip jar is not necessarily going to put your kids through college, you know? And so like, and if your goal is to have that happen, then the best thing you can do is serve the audience as best you can. You know, I was never like, let me make cheap dollars. I was always like, how do I make really good stuff that keeps people being like, wow, I can't believe they made this and it's free. Make as much of that shit as you can. You know, free this, free that. Work really hard. Make the product even better than everybody else's stuff. If your free stuff is better than the paid stuff they get elsewhere, they're going to stick with you. Because imagine they were going to pay for something else that wasn't as good as the free thing you're giving away. That's how you build loyalty. You know, you really do have to care about your audience. Somebody sends you an email. Mm-hmm. Don't be like, I'll tell you for $100. You know, you send them the answer or whatever it is, right? There's a lot of that. And I know it sounds like a ridiculous example, but try emailing one of these like real estate guru guys a question. You'll never hear back. But if you do, they're not going to be like, here's the answer, right? They're going to charge you for their stupid inner circle garbage.
Yeah.
Like, don't do that. You know, don't try and monetize everything. It's a freaking hobby until it's not. And the way that I look at it right now is the advertisers pay for everything so that the show remains free. And so when people go, oh, there's ads in it, which is rare. I get that like once every 3 months. I'm like, are you kidding? Yes, of course there's ads in it. Would you rather I charge you? And of course, these are kids you're talking to. They don't understand. But like, you want to make something that they can't, that people can't believe is free. And the way that you do that sustainably is by getting mattress companies to pay you to do it, right? Or auto insurance companies to pay you to do it. Most people understand that business model. And then you make the ads fun and da-da-da, you turn it into part of the product. So always be thinking about the audience. You know, always be advocating for them. Don't let your guests sell them a bunch of crap. Don't try and sell them a bunch of crap yourself. Don't sell too much. Don't pressure them into doing things. Don't nag them for things. You know, just build really good stuff. Make really good stuff.
But there's got to be an inflection point. I mean, you're kind of unique in the fact that you're in this kind of advice, self-help space. I don't want to call it self-help because it's really not. It's more like hearing what effective people do. And if you want to try to do some of that same stuff, you can.
Right.
It's not, you know, you're not trying to preach. But, you know, you could sell all of these things that these people sell. Like if you put together a $2,000 seminar in LA, you could pack it.
For sure. I did. I spent years selling, you know, dating courses and networking courses and teaching them, and they were highly rated, right? But they're a ton of work. And I'm thinking, okay, what kind of work do I want to do? I love reading books and talking to smart people. That's what I do now. Could I make an extra million or two or $3 a year coaching? Yeah. Do I love the idea of doing that? Not really. So for me now, looking at the, you ever hear that, like, there's like some experiment or whatever, or some business school study where they're like, after $79,000 a year or $80,000 a year, your level of happiness doesn't go up with the amount of money that you make. You ever hear about this?
It's absolutely true. And I think about that in my daily life, yeah, because I get pitched to move from job to job and they're like, oh, it's, you know, this much.
You're going to make five grand more a year. And you're like, yeah, but I live in Albuquerque. No, thanks. You know,
it's not going to make any difference in my right. life.
Yeah. Nothing. No offense to Albuquerque. I'm just kidding. But like, you know, there's people who, I used to work on Wall Street. There were so many people who were miserable and they're like, yeah, but I made I made 800 grand last year. And I'm like, if you made 400 grand last year, but you had every weekend with your kids and you worked half days on Fridays, do you think you'd be a happier person? Of course you would. I remember one of our law professors who was a managing partner at a law firm. So probably worked, you know, 120 hours a week or whatever. He said to the whole class, how many of you would take half your salary and work half as much? Because, you know, we were looking at like making like 190 grand a year or something like that. And every freaking everyone practically raised their hand. And he was like, yeah. I forget what his point was. It was something to do with health insurance and benefits or something like that. But the point was, everybody was like, at that point in our lives, it was like, yeah, I want quality of life. I don't need that much more than, you know, 90 grand a year or whatever that half ended up being. Science sort of bears that out, right? Like, there's studies that show, and I think the inflation adjusted amount is like $90,000 or something like that, maybe a little less, depending on the area where you live. Beyond that amount of money, your marginal level of happiness per dollar doesn't really increase. It's like it flatlines until you hit like 5 million or something like that, you know?
Yeah, because you solve your basic life problems with about
And you're going to retire at a reasonable time, and you're going to go on every vacation that you want, and you can buy whatever kind of car you want, pretty much. You don't have your own jet, you know? But like,
no,
you don't.
I mean, that's where the $5 million comes in,
right? Or the more than that, or $15 million. It like really flattens that. It's sort of like there's like the people who make 90 grand a year, and then there's like billionaires, and those people are on separate tiers. But everybody who makes like $1 or $2 or $3 million a year is on the exact, pretty much the exact, or two small steps above the engineer who makes like $94,000 a year in his home all the time and lives in Canton, Ohio, right? You're the same level of
They got bigger houses,
but it
maybe,
doesn't,
you know,
but it doesn't but make you happier problems. Because of the hedonic treadmill, which is a whole psychology concept. But basically, like, you might think that people who have more money than you are happier, but you're only right up until $90,000, and then you're wrong until you hit a billion or whatever it is, right? So for me, the original point I was trying to make was, I could probably kill myself, but with work and coaching and drilling and And I see workaholic friends of mine doing this, and I'm like, dang, you made like $6 million last year. But they're kind of miserable, and they're like graying, you know, not that I'm not graying, but you know, they're like not doing.
It's working.
They're working themselves to death. They really are. And I know that they hate a lot of it, because I know they hate a lot of their customers, and they're dealing with all this BS, and they've got these teams of 78 people. And I'm like, I got five people here, man, you know, and we're happy and we're having fun and everybody's chill. And there's like no emergencies ever with anything. There's no logistics that aren't already things we've done a billion times. I rarely have to put on pants, right? But now if I'm like, oh, I want to coach and make this extra money, now I've got to rent venues, and there's logistics, and there's refunds, and there's this, and there's that, and there's the other thing, and I've got to be on all the time. And it's like, no thanks. All for what? So I, when I die, leave my kids with $60 million instead of 20? Like, who cares? You know?
Yeah. So maybe we can bring it back down to where an indie podcaster is, right? Like, let's say they do really want to, they have a sports podcast and they really do want to turn it into their job, right? They hate their job. They work at, you know, Kmart, which I don't think exists anymore, but let's say, you know, they just have a regular job somewhere, and you know, they're an expert in basketball. They want to make a basketball podcast, and that's what they want to do for money.
Right.
Like, what do you think the inflection point is in a podcast where you think it's good enough that you can push it to job status?
Yeah, I mean, right? Like, luckily you don't ever have to think it's good enough, because the market will tell you if it's good enough, right? Like, if you are getting a bunch of new listeners and you're able to promote it and your listeners are sticking with you, then eventually you'll get more and more sponsors and you'll have the ability to create more and more because of those sponsors. And then eventually you'll be like, hey, I'm making like $7,000 a month or $3,000, yeah, whatever it is, $3,000 a month.
That would do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, okay, I'm making $3,000 a month because I do four episodes and I've got this bonus thing and my Patreon is doing this and my, you know, whatever is doing that. And I got this merch and that brings in a couple $100. Cool. Now you can sort of say, do I want to keep my job? Do I want to get a part-time job that sort of just bolsters things? Or do I want to say, hey, wife or husband, I'm doing this. I'm replacing my income. We're good, right? Mm-hmm. And they go, okay. And then you're good. You've left your horrible job. You know, you don't have to. I say people should not try to go for like the top 1%. It's very hard to get there. You want to do things like skill stacking, yeah, which I've talked about on the Jordan Harbinger show, where you're in like the top 20% or top 10% if you're really killing it, but like in three different skills, right? So like you might not be the number one most entertaining person, but you're like pretty funny and you can talk about basketball pretty well. And you're also not the number one most knowledgeable person on basketball, but you know a lot about it. And you're not the most technically inclined, but you know how to like edit your show and create it and live stream it and all that other stuff. You're just good enough to do all those things. Well, now you've got a media channel that you can run. I am not the funniest person in the world and I never was and I probably never will be, but it doesn't matter because I'm entertaining enough for my show, but I'm also technical enough to run my own show and I've got enough business sense to negotiate my own contracts. I have a law degree that doesn't hurt. And you know, I also am experienced in teaching and coaching, so I can look through a lot of the psychology material and I'm good at that. I'm good at finding guests. I'm good at convincing them to come on the show because I have a sales background, right, from my previous business. Those are all skill sets that I'm not top 1% at. I'm probably in the top, maybe in the 80th percentile, you know, like B plus or whatever. So combine all those things. Now you have the Jordan Harbinger show, which is a nice it's a great business. You know, it's a great business, but no one's going to be like, oh my God, you're so funny that you should have your own special on Netflix. You know, like that's not happening. No one's calling me to diagnose their technical issues, really. And you know, I'm not getting a honorary PhD from MIT anytime soon or from Brown for my psychology skills. I'm just good enough to create the show that's about it that and market that show and make sure that it survives, right? And that's actually better than, in many cases, it's also better than being in the top 1% in any particular area. Like, I could have stayed, I do this all the time. Not all the time. I've done this in the past, I should say. I look at what would I be making now if I stayed at the law firm and I did well? Probably like, well, I won't quote numbers because it doesn't matter, but I would be making a lot of money like a financial attorney would, but I would be working 80 to 120 hours a week. I would have a lot of stress. I'd be living in Manhattan and dealing with a lot of high cost of living. Instead, I'm able to do a lot of the things that I want, be very flexible with my time, enjoy almost everything that I do. And I'm actually making way more than those guys.
Yeah. Well, billable hours jobs like that are hell, right?
Hell.
Doctor, lawyer, accounting, you know, all of those where you actually have to speak to someone to make money.
Yep.
It's a hard, hard job.
It's very hard. Yeah. I literally speak to people to make money, so maybe I shouldn't, but I know what you're saying. I'm not trading time for money.
The hours don't click by.
They don't.
You know, every hour.
They don't. And the other thing is it's sort of infinitely scalable. Like that's what I love about podcasting is, you mentioned the creators at home creating for 500 people. Let's say it takes them 4 hours to create an episode and 500 people hear it. Well, when you have 500,000 people listening to you, if that ever happens, you're putting in, maybe you've stepped it up and now it's 5 or 6 hours of work, but it's not 40.
Yeah, added some music.
Right, you've added some music. Right, you've hired someone to do these other things. So like for me, when I was creating a show and I had 30,000 people downloading it, I was spending, let's say, 8 hours doing prep. Now I have a show, let's say 230,000 people are downloading it. I'm doing the exact same amount of work, except all the stuff I don't want to do, I hired somebody else for that. So I'm doing the same amount of work,
because you finally have
stuff
some
that
money.
I actually like. Yeah. And I'm doing it in a nicer house. You know what I mean? Like, it's scalable. And when I double my audience, because I'm spending a lot on marketing and advertising and things like that, this year and last year and in the coming years, because it's working, let's say I double it and I have 500,000 people listening to me, I'm still going to be spending the pretty much the same amount of time doing prep. It's not going to take me longer to read books and take notes because my audience is twice the size, but my ad rates are going to be double, at least what they are now.
Yeah. And, you know, as we wind down the interview, I want to touch on that because you have a big presence in the ad spend department. Mm-hmm. And I know this because I go and try to buy ads and I'm always like, is my banner going to be next to Jordan's? Like,
yes.
No matter where, the answer is yes. No matter what app, no matter who I'm talking to, it's always like there's a Jordan banner.
There better
spot be. Something. It's
if you
everywhere.
Find something where there isn't, I want to know. Yeah.
You'll know. I'll send you a screenshot of my banner in the slot.
Exactly. Exactly.
So is there any way to build a big show without advertising?
Yeah, there is. I mean, I didn't spend to get where I am now. It's not true. I didn't spend to get where I was before I started spending, which is like the dumbest truism ever, right? But, but like, I got really big before I started spending. And the reason I did it was because I was going on other people's shows and I was doing swaps where I would advertise for them and they would advertise for me. And I did that for like freaking 12 years. You know what I mean? Like, that's a long time. You get a lot of returns for that. And then I was creating at the time what I thought was really good content. The bar gets raised every year, but I was creating good stuff. So the audience would tell, you know, I'd have somebody go, hey, I'm listening to this podcast. Have you heard of it? Oh, you got to listen to this. It's really good. So I had word of mouth. That slowly over time snowballs. Paid media is great, but it really is like the cherry on top. It's really the garnish. Right. It can never, it's the spice, not the dish, whatever. There's a lot of metaphors in here. But the point is, you can sort of buy your way into something, but it's a lot more effective to slowly build, get a lot of skills, have people who love your stuff. And then when it's like, I tell everyone I know about your show, you're like, well, if you're telling everyone you know, what would happen if I spent $100,000 telling everybody that everybody else knows who's going to take my money?
And like everybody that uses CastBox.
Right. Like everybody uses CastBox or like everybody who listens to The Hidden Brain, right? Like what happens when I pay them to advertise? Now you're talking, right? Because that's really allows you to scale. So the amount of new listeners that I would normally get like in a month through all the swaps and all the back and forth, now I can get that in like a day. And I can do that 30 days a month for 2 years or you know, I plan on doing that for years. Until I see really decreased return on investment.
What I've found is if you want to know if your show is bad, not good, but bad, buy an ad and see that no one comes back for show number two.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
that's the worst. I've done it. Like, I think people starting out have done it, you know, before you advertise before your show is any good. And you might as well just light money on fire.
Yeah, it's true. It's funny because I look in Chartable, which is where I like check like growth and rankings.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh good, our retention rate. I was like, oh, our retention rate looks kind of rough, like that stuff. And I started talking to friends. I was like, what's your retention rate? And it was a little bit lower. And I was like, okay, I feel good that mine's like at the top of the bracket compared to my friends who have good shows. So this is just like a naturally okay retention rate. And then I started doing buys for clients who were very new to podcasting and some of their shows were like, oh, okay, this could be better. We're going to work on it, yada, yada. And their retention rates were horrible. And I'm like, the key really is you have to be good before you buy paid media. Because like you said, otherwise you're just lighting money on fire. Like if you're walking a mile to a well to get water, that bucket better not have holes in the bottom. And all these guys that are creating shows that stink and they're like, ah, screw it, I'm going to buy my way to the top. You really can't, because all you're doing is just repeatedly throwing money into this bucket that has holes in the bottom. And it's a waste. You want something where you have a ton of really loyal listeners that are like, I love this. Because then you can find those needles and all those haystacks. But if your show is kind of crap and everybody who hears it is like, eh, you're never going to have, there's no point in buying paid media. You know, go take a speaking class. Right. Go take a comedy class. Like that's how you're going to make your show better. It's better to be sticky than it is to be like widespread. Right. You don't want to churn your listeners. Yeah.
Well, I think that is a brilliant way to end this interview. I mean, right to the point.
Well, I'm nothing if not brilliant. No, I'm kidding. No, thank you. It's not that deep, right? Like you should be able to go, oh, the content has to be good, and then people will listen to it, and people will stick with it. It's literally the most important part of the whole equation.
Right. But I know people are at home right now thinking, if I could just afford that ad on Overcast, that's what would do it.
Yeah, and it's not. It's not. Yeah. Like, I'll tell you right now, I've spent probably, I'm hesitant to always quote figures because it sounds douchey, but whatever, for the sake of the listener here, I've spent probably 7 figures on marketing. Yeah. All those in-app features, all those shout-outs I get on other shows, I've spent a lot of money on that. Still the number one growth vector has been me going on other shows over time, doing good content, word of mouth sharing. Now, the paid marketing is quickly going to eclipse that over time just because of the nature of it. But I guarantee you that I wouldn't have the audience sticking with me if I didn't do the groundwork first to make sure it was a solid show.
Yeah. These people quit after 4 episodes, and it took you 12 years to get to this level.
Yeah. Yeah, 7 years in, I was like, oh, I think I'm getting good at this. I think I'm getting better at this. And now I look at those episodes from 7 years ago, and I'm like, oh my God, it's so bad.
Yeah.
You know?
It really takes a long time.
A long time. It's a real skill.
So maybe tell people where they can find you and give them all your calls to action.
Yeah, sure. People probably had enough of me by now. But if you haven't, The Jordan Harbinger Show is the name of my podcast, H-A-R-B-I-N-G-E-R. I do less talking on my show, right? I let the guests do the talking. But I do a lot of prep. I love the interview game. And I think, I would be honored if people would listen. Your attention is always the highest compliment you can give anyone. And I'm at Jordan Harbinger on Twitter and Instagram as well.
Yeah. And just a personal endorsement for me, the Friday shows just crack me up.
The advice shows.
I mean, B. Swami, come on, man. Mm. That was gold.
Aren't you glad that you're not the people who write in with look, I love those people. That's why I help them. But whenever I get those, I look at question one and me and Gabriel are like, wow, man, some people got real ish going on.
Yeah, it's a life that I don't live, and I just can't even imagine the life that these other folks live, and I feel bad for them. And I'm glad that you
I do. They're amazing people, and I communicate with all of them well after the show. So that's what's so cool about it is you get to help people with these hairy problems. For people who don't know what we're talking about, Friday I give advice on the show, people write in. And so I tongue in cheek say, wow, I'm really glad I'm not them. But on the other hand, they're all amazing people that are dealing with just some craziness. So it's my honor to be able to call lawyer friends and call people in the CIA and be like, what do we do with this weird problem? And they're like, okay, here's what I would do. Right. It's really, really a lot of fun. So yeah, the Friday shows are a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for being on the show.
Yeah.
And I'll put all your information in the show notes below so people can find you. And I hope they do.
Yeah. Thanks so much, man. Really appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Wow. I hope everyone enjoyed that interview as much as I did. Special thanks to Jordan Harbinger for coming on and providing all those amazing insights. Everything we talked about will be in the show notes below. So if anything's interesting to you, you can check it out down there.
If you are an indie podcast creator wanting to grow your audience, check out indiedropin.com/creators. If you found this episode valuable and you would like to help support the show, you can buy me a coffee. Just go to buymeacoffee.com/indiedropin. Thank you so much for listening.